Hello, my friends. Today's wrong question is, so Josh, what future are we going to get? Here's why that's the wrong question. It assumes the future is like a map with a singular destination point. We're all just kind of hurtling towards it. But that's not how the future works at all. Here's what I know after 20 years of helping leaders navigate change. Future, it's not a map. There's no set route. There's no predetermined destination. The future is a blank page. And right now, in this strange and turbulent moment, we are holding the pen. And today, I'm going to show you the three most possible futures. One of them completely, ruthlessly sucks. Two are worth fighting for. And one gets us on the path to Star Trek. I'll also tell you exactly what it's going to take to get us to the good ones. But in all these paths, there's one thing that matters most. You. I'm Josh Allen Dykstra. This is the Hello Tomorrow podcast. Let's go. Quick note before we dive in. If you're a Substack person, we're there now. HelloTomorrowPodcast.substack.com. I'd love to see you there. All right. Last week, we talked about why we probably can't prevent the AI crisis, but we can shorten its chaos window. A quick reminder on what that means using some forth-turning language. We're in winter. And winter has four stages. Stage one started around 2008, the great financial crisis. Stage two started around 2016, Trump versus Clinton. That's when a lot of us woke up and realized things were really broken. Stage three is the chaos window. This is a catalyst plus a big organizing conflict. Think Pearl Harbor and the US joining World War II. We haven't hit that moment yet, but I think we're getting close. Stage four is when winter ends. It's like D-Day. This is projected to be sometime around 2030. So right now we're in stage two, heading into stage three. This is the calm before the storm. Things feel weird, certainly, but not quite yet like chaos. Last week I mentioned I'd share with you the two most possible future paths. Well, there's actually three, but only two of them have any kind of reasonable outcome. So we're going to call the first one path zero, because quite simply, it sucks and we can't allow it to happen. Let's talk about that one first. Path zero. This is what I call the don't look up future. This is the one where we just keep going on the path we're on. Capitalists keep optimizing everything for more capital. The importance of quarterly earnings beats long-term survival needs. The incentives never change because the people making capital decisions today, they won't be around for the worst consequences anyway. So, you know, who freaking cares? Here's what happens. Global average temperatures increase another 2 degrees. Coral reefs, which support roughly 25% of marine species and contribute to the food security for at least a half a billion people, are basically defunct. Another degree of warming pushes tropical agriculture into collapse. Hundreds of millions of climate refugees stress every political system on Earth simultaneously. When this happens, the complexity that's produced all our modern miracles, medicine, food distribution, global communication, it all starts unraveling because our endless extraction has destroyed the biological system all of it depends on. This isn't speculation. This is simply the path if current trajectories continue. Johan Rockström's planetary boundaries research identifies 9 Earth system boundaries we got to stay within to maintain a stable biosphere. We've already blown through 7 of those 9. But path zero, pardon my language, doesn't give a shit. I'm not willing to accept this path. I hope you aren't either. Let's talk about the other two. Path A is what I call the simplification future. But what if we collectively decided to want less? Deliberately reduced complexity, localized supply chains, built regional resilience before the system forces that on us. That sounds radical until you realize it's already happening, not by design, but by markets. Anthropologist Joseph Tainter showed that complex societies collapse when they can't sustain the energy needed to maintain their own complexity. I mentioned this briefly last week when we talked about the Roman Empire disintegrating into feudalism. When energy can't be sustained, systems become what Tainter calls nearly decomposable, which just means they break into simpler, more independent units. This is what happened when the Roman Empire fragmented into feudal Europe. Same land, same people, but far lower complexity. Accenture surveyed major global companies and found 85% are actively planning to regionalize their supply chains by this year, 2026. GE is investing $3 billion to move appliance production to the southeastern United States. The language of nearshoring has gone from academic to pretty standard corporate vocabulary in a very short amount of time. The system logic's pretty simple. Complex systems require ever-increasing energy and coordination costs to maintain themselves. When those costs exceed returns, systems simplify, because the math stops working. We may already be at that inflection point for parts of the global economy. What does a simplified world actually look like? Think less apocalypse and more like just a different organization of human life. It would look more like regional food systems, which, by the way, are also growing rapidly. It would look like more distributed energy generation. It would look like less hyper-specialization and more communities that can actually function if the global supply chain hiccups. Some of you listening, you've already noticed this direction in your conversations or in your intuition. The historical analog here isn't Rome collapsing. It's what happened after Rome in the regions that adapted well. For example, in that period, parts of what are now France and Spain developed remarkably resilient local economies, local governance, local food systems. The emotional truth of Path A is this. There is genuine beauty and peace available in a simpler, more local world. You might feel it as I'm describing it. To me, almost feels like an exhale. Life right now is not just complex, but complicated. And even the idea of simplification feels pretty nice. Also, the research on human well-being consistently shows that strong community relationships and meaningful work with visible outcomes and connection to place are among the most powerful predictors of life satisfaction. So a world that's less globalized and more locally rooted serves human flourishing kind of better than the one we have now in many ways. But there's a big challenge with this path. Path A also contains an incredibly dangerous chaos window for our most vulnerable populations. Why? Because these folks, they depend most heavily on the complexity of the current system, and they have the least ability to opt out of it. Think about someone who relies on a global pharmaceutical supply chain for life-saving medication, or a family in a food desert whose grocery store depends entirely on long-haul distribution, or communities in the developing world whose economic progress has been built on participation in global trade. Local resilience is great if you have the resources and geography to build it. It's a crisis if you don't. And too many people don't. This is why I prefer Path B. Path B is what I call the on the way to Star Trek future. I have a deep love for Star Trek that somehow I haven't talked about yet on this podcast. Star Trek is the most sophisticated version of optimistic futurism I've seen in pop culture. It doesn't pretend the hard stuff didn't happen. It assumes we got through a eugenics war, contact with other species, a post-money transition, all fourth turnings, probably. But what makes this sci-fi remarkable is that Star Trek's future requires far more complexity than we have now, but it works because they adopted an organizing story that provides for everyone's basic needs. Path B gets us on the road to Star Trek sooner. So naturally, this is my favorite one. So what does Path B actually look like? Well, it starts with energy. Now, remember the energy conundrum. Additional complexity requires additional energy, but producing more energy in the current way will kill our biosphere. So, seems like we're stuck, right? No, not necessarily. This trap kind of has a side door. Our constraint isn't energy production itself. It's our current super old school methods of producing energy. And we already have better methods. A solar panel installed today produces 50% more electricity and costs 90% less than a decade ago. Wind turbines installed today produce nearly 5 times the power of turbines from the late 90s, and they keep getting bigger and cheaper and more efficient every year. Great clean energy technology exists. It works. None of it is experimental. We don't need to put a nuclear reactor on every corner. We don't need fusion or hydrogen cars. We can do this with the technology we have. And the constraint? It's not money either. To keep our global temperature to rise under 2 degrees, the International Energy Agency puts the price tag at $4.5 trillion a year spent on clean energy investment. Now that sounds enormous until you know we're already spending $7 trillion a year propping up the system that's killing us. Seriously, that's the full environmental cost of our current fossil fuel subsidies. We are literally paying more to maintain the problem than it would cost to solve it. The truth of path B is this. If we use our chaos window to get the energy transition right, the ceiling for human civilization gets dramatically higher. Not just survivable, genuinely extraordinary. This is energy so cheap, it stops being a constraint. It's AI coordinating supply chains at a level of sophistication no human institution could match. It's a global economy organized around entirely different physics, not combustion, right? Not the controlled explosion of ancient carbon, but sunlight and wind converted directly into work. No exhaust, no debt pumped into the atmosphere. This is a world that truly prepares the soil for our descendants to build something Star Trek worthy. Now, you all know I'm no tech bro hype machine. I'm just looking at the tech that's currently available and saying, what if we had an organizing story that pushed us in a Star Trek direction? That is worth fighting for. But here's the challenge of Path B. As we discussed, the constraint isn't technology or money. It's actually something more difficult. Collective will and current incentives. I don't think we're going to get to Path B by convincing capitalists to become environmentalists. The "you can't do business on a dead planet" argument kind of fails on timeline because they believe their fiduciary duty is to quarterly earnings, not to 2075. So I think we need to make a better capitalist argument. Specifically, whoever builds the new energy infrastructure wins. Energy is the ultimate input cost for every business that exists. Control cheap, abundant, clean energy, and you get an oversized influence on the cost structure of the entire global economy for the next century. I think China understands this, and I think it's why they installed 329 gigawatts of solar power in 2024 alone, more than the rest of the world combined. I don't think that was environmentalism. I think it was the biggest competitive advantage play that we've seen in our lifetimes. Here in the US, we're still doubling down on fossil fuels. Even if you only care about business and not the planet, this is a stupid and uncompetitive strategy. So, how do we get Path B going? History suggests Path B is going to require a catalyst moment, a crisis or a competitive threat large enough to break our political paralysis and authorize mobilization scale investment. This is why I lean on the fourth turning so much. This kind of step change catalyst has happened before, many times, and it's ready to happen again. Before December 7, 1941, the US had the industrial capacity, the technology, the workforce to build a war machine. What it lacked was the collective will and incentives to do so. The attack on Pearl Harbor changed that overnight. Within 2 years, war production was 40% of our national economy. So what could provide that kind of catalyst today? Obviously, we don't want to direct it toward war. We want to direct it toward clean energy. But the kindling for a catalyst moment like this right now is so dry, several things could ignite it. Now see if you could picture any of these things happening. A global trade war that fractures our supply chains and makes the cost of fossil fuel dependence really viscerally untenable. How about an escalating Middle East conflict that spikes energy prices high enough to make the cheap oil forever assumption collapse? How about an extreme weather event on a scale like we've never seen, like a Category 6 hurricane that hits a major city? We don't know yet what spark is going to light this fire, but the conditions for ignition, they're already here. Now, I won't lie to you, even once this mobilization happens, the chaos window in Path B is still real and painful. There's going to be workforce displacement as AI restructures the economy. We'll have an organizing story evolution as the old growth and consumption narrative breaks fully. There's the rather excruciating work of redesigning global institutions that are right now built for a completely different era. Historical analogs tell us this path is probably 10 to 20 years for the full shift, with some acute chaos in the first 5 to 10. I will not minimize the painful parts of a transition like this. And if we are smart about it, if we prepare well and commit ourselves to helping those around us, I think we will find many opportunities for joy and even celebration in the midst of the difficulties of this transition. Our thoughtfulness now will also help determine how long the chaos window will be. Of course, shortening that window, that's why we do this every week. Before we close for today, I need to call out something that's really important. We desperately need a new organizing story for humanity. An organizing story that only exists to create more capital is a story that will fail us all eventually, including the holders of capital. Furthermore, the current story, grow, consume, compete, accumulate, privatize everything, it's breaking. We feel it everywhere. I've spent a lot of time on this podcast planting seeds about idea for what could come next. But here's what we haven't really talked about yet until today. We can't install a new organizing story in a dying biosphere. The new story needs an alive world to take root in. So what we're doing right now, in this winter, in our chaos window, this is survival and foundation work. We're not planting the garden quite yet. Right now, we're putting out the dang fire so we can plant anything. Redirecting capitalist energy toward clean infrastructure, that's not the new story, but it is clearing the ground so the new story actually has somewhere to grow. It's sequencing. The new organizing story is what we're building at Hello Tomorrow. This particular episode is about us surviving long enough to get there. Today, I'm introducing a new section into the podcast called The Leadership Lens. It answers a simple question for you leaders out there. So what? What does this mean if you're a leader in an organization right now? So here's your leadership lens for today. Inside your organization, you're making the same bets every world government is making, just at a smaller scale. What future are you preparing for? If you're a leader in an organization, I'd argue you need to be doing two things right now. First, you need to look at your supply chains, your energy costs, your geographic dependencies. The companies that are already regionalizing, they're not doing this because they read Joseph Tainter. They're doing this because the math is changing. Path A, simplification, it's not theoretical for your procurement team. It is already showing up in your cost structure, whether you've looked at it or not. So take a look. Second, and this is the one many leaders miss, your people are going to feel the chaos window too. They are anxious, they are confused, they're getting whiplash from every new headline about AI and the economy and the future of their jobs. Your job as a leader, it's not to have all the answers. Your job is to replace panic with clarity. Here's what I know from working with organizations employing over 1 million people. Confusion has a cost. When people don't understand the world they're operating in, they freeze, they disengage, they burn out. Clarity is the leadership advantage we're not talking enough about right now. You don't have to know which scenario wins. You just have to help your people understand that both survivable paths require the same things from them. Adaptability, community, resilience to navigate uncertainty without losing themselves in it. That is what great leadership looks like in winter. Okay, now here's what I want to leave us all with. We are not passengers in this story, my friends. We are not watching history happen to us. We are in it. We are making choices right now, today, that will echo forward in ways we can't yet fully see. Path zero is only inevitable if we accept it. I refuse to accept it. I hope you do too. Our optimistic rebellion for this week has three options. I challenge you to pick one of these three and actually do it, right? First option. If you want to fight for Path B with me, the Star Trek future, find one place where your money is still funding the old system and move it. One investment, one utility choice, one purchasing decision. Capital follows signals. Be one of the signals. And if you're a leader with real capital allocation authority, that conversation needs to happen in your next planning cycle, not eventually, next cycle. All right. Second option, if you want to prepare for path A, simplification, have one real conversation with a neighbor that you don't know well enough yet. Not small talk, a real conversation. Ask them what they're good at. Borrow their lawnmower. Just kidding. But seriously, tell them what you're good at. That's it. Just start building the community infrastructure. That's going to matter more than anything you can stockpile. Option three, tend to your inner life. This is also a great choice. Honestly, might be the most important one. Sit quietly for 10 minutes tomorrow morning before you look at your phone. No agenda, just sit. The people who navigate the chaos window best, they won't necessarily be the richest or the most prepared materially. They'll be the ones who built enough inner stability that they don't need the world to stay the same in order to be okay. Refuse path zero. Fight for path B. Prepare for path A. Tend to your inner life. And remember, nothing about this is inevitable. The future is not something that happens to us. It's something we design together. This has been the Hello Tomorrow podcast, where we cut through the noise, expose the systems shaping our future, and leave with more clarity about what comes next. If this episode gave you more clarity about what's coming, please share it with someone you care about. And if you're thinking, I wish our organizational leaders were having more deep, sense-making conversations about what's next, that's exactly the work I do as a keynote speaker and advisor. Because when leaders bring clarity, everything works better. You can find me at joshallan.com, joshallan.com, or send me an email anytime, future@hellotomorrowpodcast.com. Now, if you're still here at the very end, I have a surprise for you. I'd love to invite you to be an early reader of my upcoming book, most likely titled Work Will Kill Us All, An Optimist's Guide to the Future. If you'd like to come along with me as I write this, and you can even leave comments as I write, you can sign up at workwillkillusall.com. Thanks for being here. See you next week.